the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, John Russell explains why New York City officials have taken legal action against two car makers. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is John Russell.
New York City is taking legal action against the car makers Hyundai and Kia. City officials say some of the company's vehicles have a design problem that makes them easier to steal. The car models in the case lack equipment called engine immobilizers. These devices prevent the engine from starting unless the key is present. Such devices have been used on most cars since the 1990s. But videos on TikTok and other sites show how to start the cars using only USB cables and a common tool called a screwdriver. New York government lawyers say that Hyundai Motor America and Kia America Incorporated failed to keep up with other automakers by not using immobilizer technology. Hyundai's and Kia's business decisions to reduce costs and thereby boost profits by foregoing common anti-theft technology have resulted in an epidemic of thefts, the lawsuit states. The city says the vehicle thefts are putting pressure on its police department's resources and harming public safety and emergency services. The New York City Police Department reports that about 287 Kias were stolen last year, compared with approximately 119 in 2021. Around 415 Hyundais were reported stolen in 2022, compared with 232 a year earlier. The problem has continued, with an estimated 977 Hyundai and Kia vehicles reported stolen in the first 4 months of this year. There were only 148 such thefts in the same months last year. New York, the nation's biggest city by population, joins a growing list of cities going after the car makers. Other major cities in Maryland, Ohio, Wisconsin, and other states have filed similar legal complaints after large increases in car thefts. New York City is requesting an order for abatement of the problem. It also requests that the court order Hyundai and Kia to pay for economic losses suffered by the city as a result of the problem. Hyundai says it is committed to ensuring the quality and soundness of its products. In a written statement, the automaker said that a small group of basic, low-cost Hyundai cars on the road in the U.S. today are not equipped with push-button ignitions and immobilizing anti-theft devices. The statement added, "It is important to clarify that an engine immobilizer is an anti-theft device, and these vehicles are fully compliant with federal anti-theft requirements. All Hyundai cars made from November 2021 onward have engine immobilizers." The company also said that it's speaking with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration on the actions it is taking to assist its customers. Kia did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. Last month, Hyundai and Kia reached a settlement to end a lawsuit prompted by an increase in vehicle thefts. The settlement could be valued at $200 million and covers about 9 million 2011 to 2022 model year Hyundai and Kia vehicles in the U.S., the companies said at the time. The settlement will provide payment to customers who suffered theft-related losses or damage not covered by insurance, as well as payments for insurance deductibles, increased insurance prices, and other losses, Kia and Hyundai said. A software improvement will also be provided to some owners. For customers with vehicles that cannot use the software upgrade, the agreement will provide a payment of up to $300 for anti-theft devices. Kia and Hyundai have also given affected customers tens of thousands of free steering wheel locks through local law enforcement and direct shipments, the companies said. A court is expected to consider that proposed settlement starting in July. I'm John Russell.
Scientists say they have observed the most distant organic molecules known to exist in the universe. Astronomers made the discovery using the James Webb Space Telescope, operated by the American Space Agency, NASA. The kind of organic molecules observed are called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs. These molecules are considered the basic building blocks for early forms of life. They have a complex structure and are found in many environments on our own planet. For example, PAHs can be found on Earth in smoke, burned materials, and air pollution. The molecules were discovered in a galaxy more than 12 billion light-years from Earth. The scientists say this is the most distant observation of PAHs ever. Past observations of PAHs have been difficult in distant galaxies because of limitations in infrared telescope technology. But the James Webb's sensitive instruments made the discovery possible, the researchers said. The team said that because of the extreme distance involved, the light used to make the observation likely began traveling when the universe was less than 1.5 billion years old. This is about 10% of the universe's current age. The astronomers recently reported their findings in a study in the publication Nature. The targeted galaxy is known as SPT-041847. Scientists had already identified it as a galaxy similar to our own Milky Way in several ways, but the amount of dust surrounding it made past observations difficult. The researchers said telescope data permitted them to differentiate between infrared signals produced by larger dust particles and those produced by PAHs. Justin Spilker is an astronomer at Texas A&M University. He helped lead the research. He said in a statement that paws are actually pretty common in space. But the latest research helped astronomers learn new things about them. Astronomers used to think they were a good sign that new stars were forming, Spilker said. Anywhere you saw these molecules, baby stars were also right there. Spilker noted that the power of the James Webb Telescope permitted the team to find many areas with smoke but no star formation. The researchers said an observation method called gravitational lensing also helped them. This method involves observing how the gravity of large collections of galaxies can distort the light of more distant galaxies that sit behind the galaxy group, NASA explains. To distort means to change the natural or normal quality of something. Joaquin Vieira is a professor of astronomy and physics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He was a lead researcher on the project. Vieira said that the combined abilities of James Webb and gravitational lensing made it possible for the researchers to observe through the dust to identify the paws. Observations of the targeted galaxy suggested it contained gas filled with heavy elements. This means that generations of stars had already lived and died there, the team said. Vieira said the findings were completely unexpected and could be a game changer for future observations of distant galaxies. This work is just the first step, and we're just now learning how to use the telescope and learn its capabilities. He added, "We are very excited to see how this plays out." The astronomers are looking forward to using the same equipment and methods to find out more about the early formation of the universe. Texas A&M's Spilker said he is excited to see all the new things the James Webb can do for astronomers in the future. Detecting smoke in a galaxy early in the history of the universe, Webb makes this look easy, Spilker said. Now that we've shown this is possible for the first time, we're looking forward to trying to understand whether it's really true that where there's smoke, there's fire, he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn is here now to talk more about this week's science report. Thanks for joining me, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Your report described new observations in a distant galaxy of organic molecules, the basic building blocks for early life forms. We learned that NASA's James Webb Space Telescope made the discovery possible. How did the telescope help the researchers?
So the team said the Webb Telescope's sensitive instruments provide much more detailed images of space objects and other surroundings. NASA has said those instruments are designed to find infrared waves through heavy gas and dust. And this is really what was required for the researchers to observe the organic molecules they discovered in a very distant galaxy.
How did the researchers say they expect this discovery to help them learn more about the early universe?
So the team said the most important finding was that these organic molecules were observed in the most distant galaxy ever, sitting more than 12 billion light years from Earth. And the light used to make the observation likely began to travel when the universe was just 1.5 billion years old. Scientists currently estimate the universe is about 13.7 billion years old. So the team said this latest discovery is likely one of many that will use the Webb telescope to observe much earlier events in the universe and in much greater detail.
Okay, well, thanks again, Brian, for joining me today and for answering questions about this week's science report.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the administration of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter. It is January 20th, 1977, Inauguration Day. America's newly elected president, Jimmy Carter, is on his way to the White House after his swearing-in ceremony at the Capitol building. But the new president is not riding in a car, he is walking. His wife, Rosalind, and his daughter, Amy, walk with him. Crowds along Pennsylvania Avenue cheer. Bands play. On this cold day in Washington, Americans look to the future. Watergate, the crisis that led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon, is several years in the past. The Vietnam War is history, too. Republican Gerald Ford served the remaining years of Nixon's term. Many people believe he brought respect and order back to the government. Yet he lost the office to Democrat Jimmy Carter in the election of 1976. The nation still has problems. Unemployment is high. So is inflation. But the future of the nation looks bright. Jimmy Carter feels sure about his future, too. On the day before his inauguration, he said,
I do feel that the people of this nation, and I think the entire world, wish me well and want to see me succeed as president. And that gives me a sense of reassurance and confidence. I think I'm ready now to be president.
During the election campaign, Carter often said he would be different from other presidents. He told voters he was not a member of the Washington political establishment, so he would do things in his own independent way. Carter was from Georgia, in the deep south of the United States. There had not been a president born in the South in more than 100 years. Carter studied nuclear engineering and attended the United States Naval Academy. He planned to stay in the Navy. Then his father died, and he decided to return to Georgia to operate the family peanut farm. Carter began his political life on the committee that supervised schools in his hometown of Plains, Georgia. He also served in other local offices. In 1966, he failed to win the Democratic nomination for governor of Georgia. For the next 4 years, he traveled around the state gathering support. He won the next election. As governor, Carter earned praise for reorganizing the state government. He also reformed state programs dealing with prisons and mental health care. In 1972, he He offered himself as a candidate for vice president with presidential candidate George McGovern, but the Democratic Party chose someone else. Carter did not wait long to begin his next political move. He would try to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1976. Jimmy Carter was hardly known outside the state of Georgia. Political experts gave him little chance. Even his mother was surprised to learn that he wanted to be president. President of what? She asked. But the farmer and former governor had a plan. He would try to win his party's primary elections in the South. He believed this would give him enough support at the party convention to win the nomination. Other Democratic candidates tried to stop him, but his plan worked. By the time of the convention, he had enough support to win the nomination on the first ballot. In the general election, Carter defeated President Ford by almost 2% of the popular vote. He lost in the West and Middle West, but won the South and Northeast. President Carter believed strongly in human rights. He hoped he could use his new position to support human rights throughout the world. On this and other issues, he was not afraid of being criticized when he believed he was right. For example, he believed it was right for the United States to end its control of the Panama Canal. He won congressional support for treaties to give control to Panama by the year 2000. He believed it was right to give diplomatic recognition to Communist China. And he believed it was right to continue negotiations with the Soviet Union about limiting nuclear weapons, even though he denounced human rights violations there. In 1979, Carter and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev signed the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, known as SALT II. However, Carter decided not to send the treaty to the Senate for approval after the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan later that year. One of the finest moments of Carter's presidency took place at Camp David. That is the holiday home of American presidents. There, in March 1979, President Anwar Sadat of Egypt met with Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel. They signed a peace treaty ending 30 years of war between their countries.
We are privileged to witness tonight a significant achievement in the cause of peace, an achievement none thought possible a year ago or even a month ago, an achievement that reflects the courage and wisdom of these two leaders.
Both men said the treaty would not have been possible without President Carter's help. President Carter was not as successful in dealing with the economy. High unemployment and inflation continued. The federal deficit increased, although he had promised to end it. And there was a shortage of gasoline. The shortage resulted when oil-producing countries limited production and exports. Carter urged American companies to develop new sources of energy in addition to oil. He said the United States needed to do this because it could not always depend on getting enough oil from other countries.
This intolerable dependence on foreign oil
threatens our economic independence and the very security of our nation. The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never. From now on, every new addition to our demand for energy will be met from our own production and our own conservation. The generation-long growth in our dependence on foreign oil will be stopped dead in its tracks right now.
During the gasoline shortage, Americans had to wait in long lines to buy fuel. They did not like it and were angry. Many were even more angry about a different situation. Like the gasoline shortage, it was a result of actions in another distant place.
Good evening. The U.S. Embassy in Tehran has been invaded and occupied by Iranian students. The Americans inside have been taken prisoner.
On November 4th, 1979, Muslim extremists in Iran seized the American embassy in Tehran. They took many hostages, including more than 60 Americans. The extremists said they were punishing the United States for being friendly with ousted Iranian leader Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The extremists refused to negotiate. They refused to release the hostages. In early April 1980, President Carter broke off diplomatic relations with Iran. He then ordered American military forces to try to rescue the hostages in Tehran. The operation failed. A sandstorm caused two of the aircraft to crash into each other. They went down in the desert, hundreds of kilometers away. The failed rescue attempt had a major effect on the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Many Americans felt it showed that he could not do the job. Their respect for him continued to decrease as the hostages continued to be held. Other things were beginning to go wrong, too. The president's younger brother, Billy, admitted receiving a large amount of money from Libya. He took the money in exchange for supporting Libyan interests with American lawmakers. His mistake was that he did not list his name as a representative of a foreign government. '80 was a presidential election year in the United States. President Carter was expected to be the candidate of the Democratic Party, but his chances were almost ruined because of the situation in Iran. Carter hoped that concern for the hostages would unite the country behind him. Instead, support turned to blame. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts believed he could defeat Carter for the nomination. Kennedy won several important Democratic primary elections. But that was not enough. The party renominated Carter. Kennedy offered Carter his support, but not very strongly. This left the party divided. The Republicans got ready to win back the White House. They hoped to do it with a strong appeal to American voters. The appeal came from a man who would become one of America's most popular presidents, Ronald Reagan.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.